Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Comedy History 101, where we school you in comedy. Today, being that it's the COVID-19 summer months of 2020, we have a special reprise of our episode on the history of George Martin. George Martin, as you might know, was the producer of the Beatles, but he got his start producing comedy albums, and you'll find out more. Before we launch into the episode, take some time to like, subscribe, and comment on Comedy History 101, wherever you get your podcast, or on our website, comedyhistory101.com. And without further ado,
you're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Good thing about doing comedy in Russia, you have captured the audience.
You're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Comedy History 101.
She loves you. Yeah! Yeah. She loves you.
Yeah!
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 All right. Now, what we heard there was a clip from the 1964 Peter Sellers George Martin collaboration of a satirical take on the Beatles' She Loves You. Peter Sellers, as we all know, he did that in the character of Dr. Strangelove.
Yep, that's who he's being, Dr. Strangelove. In that
character. Yeah. So basically it's Dr. Strangelove singing the Beatles' She Loves You. And of course, yes. You've tuned in to another episode of
Comedy History 101.
Where we school you in comedy. I am Harmon Leon. With me is Scott Kalanico. Scott, how are you enjoying this fine day?
She loves you, Harmon. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So that was, we had some fun with that, didn't we? But it all ties into the episode today of, when I say the words producer George Martin, what comes to mind?
Abbey Road, man. Paul's dead.
Paul's dead? And elaborate a little further on who George Martin is?
Oh, George Martin was a producer. He's a producer that produced majority of the Beatles albums, except I think the last, the ones that Phil Spector did. I think towards the end he didn't do those. But then they brought him back for the very last Beatles album, so that was nice of them. That's what he's famous for, yes.
Yeah, he's known for kind of adding, in the later years, kind of the crazy surrealism that you would hear on such notable songs as Strawberry Fields and A Day in the Life when it gets all trippy. So that's pure George Martin. Because do you ever hear like them break down, like just hear John Lennon do Day in the Life just on an acoustic guitar? It's like just a completely different song.
Yeah, no, I knew this. I heard the story about George Martin and the really crazy, weird part of Day in the Life, where they kind of basically just took a bunch of tapes and threw them up in the air and then just pieced them together as they found them.
But the thing is that a lot of people don't know, I didn't even know this until like last week, is that George Martin, the producer for the Beatles, largely from 1962 to 1970, he got his chops doing that kind of recording when he started in the recording industry as a producer of comedy albums. Which ties in nice because we're a podcast that does the history of comedy.
Yeah, no, that's a good nice coincidence there.
Yeah, we're not Beatles History 101 or
that's a whole another podcast.
Musical producer history 102. No, we're not. Right. No, we're Comedy History 101 and the late, great George Martin. Was he Sir George Martin at the end?
I think he is now. I think he's Sir George Martin now. Let me pull up the Comedy History 101 fact-checking computer, Harmon, while you continue on.
Or just pull up a computer because they all have Google.
He was awarded the Commander of the British Empire.
Nice, well done, and rightfully so. I mean, you always hear these conversations, Scott, like,
who's the fifth Beatle? He's the fifth Beatle. But George Martin, without a doubt, is the fifth Beatle. I would say above Pete Best, the first drummer of the Beatles. And
the other Beatle.
Yep, and above Brian Epstein, the manager of the Beatles, because it's essentially George Martin's creativity mixed with, you know, the Beatles' creativity that kind of influxed to the music that we still listen to this day.
Yeah, and that even above Murray the K, who used to call himself the fifth Beatle.
So George Martin was a comedy producer, and he worked with such comedy greats as Peter Sellers, Spike Milligan, The Goon Show, which featured Peter Sellers and Spike Milligan. Am I right, Scott?
Yes, all of those people who were featured in The Goon Show.
And of course, Beyond the Fringe, which featured Dudley Moore and Peter Cook, and we'll dive into all that later on. So George Martin's first gig when he graduated school was working for BBC's classical music department, which again, you can hear that later in the Beatles. Then he joined EMI in 1950 and became a head of EMI's record division. It was called Parlophone Records. Am I saying that right, Scott?
Parlophone, yes. Yes, I remember that label. I remember seeing Comedy Records and the like in my parents' collection with that label.
Oh, really? Wow. Yeah, because that label was all about comedy records and novelty records. And Martin's like first big hit, not for the Beatles, but in 1952, he recorded something called Mock Mozart, a single by Peter Ustinov.
Oh, addio, soverettore. Oh, Dio mio. Silenzio, amore.
Yeah, Peter Ustinov from Death on the Nile, famous actor.
And from there, he kind of moved on to producing records and collaborating that really got his comedy chops with one Peter Sellers. Scott, what do you know of one Peter Sellers?
Well, before we go on to Peter Sellers, Harmon, I wonder if there's a couple of... There's a couple George Martin things I wanted to touch on. First of all, as you said, as when he started out, like at the BBC, and then moving to EMI and Parlophone, that was back in the days when those guys would go into the studio and they'd be wearing those white lab coats.
Really? Why?
You know, like all the engineers would, because it was just what you did. You were like the engineer, so you'd be wearing like a lab coat in the. In the studio. I mean, the Beatles have a good story about that too. When they first came in there, everybody was just all wearing these lab coats, you know, in Abbey Road. They're all like very uptight in doing it, you know, by the book. So,
oh, wow.
I just wanted to throw that out there. And then that's it. What's interesting about, just to go back to the Mock Mozart, there's a couple things.
Mm-hmm.
With Peter Ustinov, that was he composed that with a Welsh composer by the name of Anthony Hopkins, which is not the actor Sir Anthony Hopkins.
No, I thought that too, but it's actually Anthony Hopkins.
Yes, and he would have been like 15 at the time when the record came out. But
Anthony Hopkins. You mean Silence of the Lambs, Anthony Hopkins.
Yeah,
would have been 15.
And that's only... An
who ironically is also Welsh.
Yeah,
isn't he?
Exactly. What's funny about the Mock Mozart is that was released in 1952 by EMI Parlophone, and that's only after Martin's boss kind of insisted that they kind of put the record out, you know, and give him a chance. And the record did really well.
Yeah, it was his first hit. And I'll preface it with many more to come. But what he really got his chops is working with Peter Sellers. So Martin's collaboration with Peter Sellers is largely in the kind of like late 50s to mid 60s, kind of when like Peter Sellers was coming into his own.
Right.
You know, The Goon Show was on radio. I believe, when did Dr. Strangelove come out? Like, I guess like 62, maybe? Because 60, that Beatles.
64.
Oh, okay. So that single that we put up front was 64 as well.
Do we have time for a bit of trivia about Dr. Strangelove?
Absolutely. As long as it fits in the realm of a history of comedy.
It kind of will fit in here. So do you remember there's a part, do you remember when they're going through, the guys in the bomber are going through their survival kits, you know, and they're all kind of reading off like everything that's in the survival kit?
Yeah.
With that scene in there, at one point it's just like they pull out, there's like, they have a bunch of condoms in the survival kit. And the line that the guy delivers in the movie that Sam, Slim Pickens delivers the movie is a guy could have a lot of fun with these in Vegas, right, holding up the condoms. But the real line that they had to dub over was he holds up the condoms and goes, a guy could have a lot of fun with these in Dallas. And they, yeah, because this came out right after the assassination, so they had to change that line.
So that ruined it for all jokes concerning the Lone Star State's largest city after that.
We could get that on another podcast as well. Yeah, no, too soon. Can't even talk about Dallas.
Oh wow, can we talk about it now though, Dallas?
I think we can. Yeah, but that was just interesting that even as far back as 1964, Dallas was considered more hedonistic than Vegas.
Wow. Why? I mean, now it's as we all know, kind of conservative.
Well, I think in the club scene, it was a little more wild, you know.
Huh. Yeah. Did not know.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Yeah, interesting.
If there's a comedy tie to that, we should do an episode on it.
We should. Oh yeah, definitely.
if not, then we just let it be.
Yeah, no. I'm thinking we could tie that into burlesque somehow. You know how the kids all like the burlesque.
Yeah.
Burlesque MCs and the like. So that'll be coming down here on Comedy History 101.
That's right. But for now, George Martin and Peter Sellers put out two very popular comedy albums. One was called The Best of Sellers, and Scott, you'll like this. We have yet to do an episode on the history of Spinal Tap, but there was a track on The Best of Sellers called So Little Time, which was a satire of rock music that both Michael McKean and Christopher Guest cited it as a very important early influence onto said Spinal Tap.
My dream is one day to play Old Vic in Shakespeare.
Sweet. You are fond of Shakespeare?
Aye.
Are you fond of Shakespeare?
We are just good friends.
He's rather shy still. Just a sweet, lovable lad. Natural, fun-loving, and a good son to his own mother and father.
You'll hear the clip. It's kind of a documentary-style clip of someone interviewing a musician and his manager.
Yeah, so, you know, Christopher Guest and Michael McKean, that's sort of like when they were, you know, probably like in coming of age and, you know, listening to the funny comedy albums. So, again, you know, influence on Spinal Tap. But that's what sort of like all the stuff that really hit with George Martin, Peter Sellers, were all kind of like musical spoofs. Like in 1957, he had another album come out called Songs for Swinging Sellers, which was a parody of Frank Sinatra.
My feet are swinging, my head is spinning, you've got me dangling on a line. You keep me swinging all the time.
Did you hear that one by any chance?
Yeah, I did. It was, you know, it was good. Swinging Sellers.
Yeah, it's him doing Frank Sinatra. But I think one track that really kind of shows the future Martin to come was a 1959 bit called A Common Entrance, which is Peter Sellers portraying a father looking into a good boarding school for his sensitive son. But if you listen to that track, just kind of the ambiance that George Martin puts in there is very kind of... we call it reminiscent if it's about to happen in the future, or what's the word for that?
Evocative.
Shape of things to come with the kind of like the audioscape he would create in Days in the Life. Because
yeah, I mean, yeah, go ahead.
No, go ahead. That was just me.
No, I was just gonna say, yeah, the things that he adds in there really kind of sell that whole little bit on the common entrance.
I see. Tell me, what types of pupil do you have here?
We have two types of pupil, Class A and Class B. At mealtimes, the Class B boys get priority.
And the Class A boys?
They get food.
You mean to tell me that the Class B boys don't eat?
I never pry into their private lives. Perhaps you'd like to see one of our typical pupils. Farnsworth? Farnsworth!
Coming, sir.
This is Farnsworth, one of our better eight-year-olds. He is 29. You may go, Farnsworth.
Thank you, sir.
Hurry along now.
Yeah, and again, it's like George Martin got the whole, you know, idea of like, you know, playing things backwards and shit like that when he was, you know, again, getting his chops in the world of comedy, in cementing him into the history of comedy. And they actually, they harvested a top five hit, you know, so he's actually getting on the UK, you know, music charts. And they were on a top five hit with a song called Goodness Gracious Me, which, did you hear that track?
A flash comes to my face and my pulse begins to race. It goes boom, booty, boom, booty, boom, booty, boom, booty, boom, booty, boom, booty, boom, 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 booty, boom, booty, boom, booty, boom.
Well, goodness gracious me. How often does this happen? When did the trouble start? You see, my stethoscope is bobbing to the throbbing of your heart.
That's what I was saying. We were talking about, you know, what we'd heard, what we hadn't. That's the one song here I'd heard a lot of. It was a big kind of 60s hit, and my favorite 60s kind of retro station would play it a lot.
Really? Wow. Because it's like a flirty duet with, you know, Hollywood hottie Sophia Loren, who he co-starred in the movie The Millionaires. And by the way, it was recorded at Abbey Road Studio.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, yeah, the single was supposed to kind of promote the movie, but it was never used in the movie.
Yeah, and it was, like, reluctant because I think they had it, like, Sellers had a fling with Sophia Loren, and that's another thing. He got, like, all the movie hotties.
Yeah, he did.
For being kind of, like, an average-looking man. He like, which, you know, gives hope that women like funny people.
Yeah, dude. We just need
or millionaires. Or millionaires. Or funny millionaires. But it was, like, it was like almost came out of just like kind of a spur of the moment recording, because it was said that Martin dragged Peter Sellers into the studio to record the song on a Saturday morning. And Martin just had an inkling, like sixth sense, that the song would become a hit. And it was, it ranked, you know, in the top five. But if you listen to it, is he kind of doing an Indian accent
I haven't seen the movie, but he's doing an Indian accent. If you know, while that was kind of his thing, that he, because he lived in India, so he could do a fairly convincing Indian accent, although not very PC by today's standards. Like the movie The Party, have you ever seen that one? Where he
the movie is The Party. Yeah, it's Biddy Num Num.
Yeah, Birdie Num Num. Birdie Num Num's kind of a classic, but can we think it's funny now?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, you know, I don't know. It's like, that's a whole nother episode.
Yeah, it's a whole nother episode, dude.
Yeah, because he did kind of paint his face and is talking in an accent, so, you know.
He did, but then, you know, in when you watch the movie, he's kind of the only redeeming character in it. You know, so it's like if we're going to our earlier
and by the way, just to tell the listeners, Blake Edwards movie of the Pink Panther fame.
Yeah, yeah. But to go to reference our last week's episode, you know, the right wing comedy of the punching up versus punching down.
Yeah,
you know, just for an example, I would say in this, yes, his face he did paint his face. He was putting on an accent, but it was in no way, I don't believe, punching down at the character, other than doing the fish out of water thing.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so again, I think we should dive into that in a future episode.
We'll get to that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But for this episode, here's another Beatles tie is John Lennon loved The Goon Show, and John Lennon cited that The Goon Show was a huge influence on the Beatles, which you can see in like the Magical Mystery Tour, which is almost so, which also featured and ties into another episode we did. The is it the Bonzo Doo-Wog Bang?
Yeah, the
Neil
Bonzo
Innes?
Doo-Dog Bang. That Neil Innes would almost be another fifth Beatle. He was like the sixth Beatle, maybe.
No, he was the fifth Monty Python or sixth Monty Python.
Oh, the sixth.
So wait, he gets to be a fifth Beatle and a sixth Monty Python?
Yeah, he crossed over.
Yeah, so they're featured in the Magical Mystery Tour. John Lennon cites the Goon Show as an influence. Scott, what do you know of the Goon Show?
Well, you know, it was all our favorites. Spike Milligan, Peter Sellers in there doing some crazy, you know, they're mostly known for the radio comedy, although later on they branched out into TV. And one of the things that the most famous records they did was a title, which, of course, produced by Mr. Martin. It was called Bridge on the River Kwai, which was kind of a parody on the Bridge of the River Kwai.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently what happened was the movie studio who made Bridge of the River Kwai threatened to sue them. So what they had to George Martin had to do was go in through to the album and edit every time anyone said Kwai to edit out the K. So it just sounded they were saying the Bridge on the River Kwai, which is actually a real river. Actually, that's the one that separates Wales from England, I believe. But that's
So that ironically worked out well because there, like you said, it is a real actual river.
So it all worked out. It does a pretty good take on, I think that Sellers doing. Al Guinness does a pretty good job there.
Mm-hmm.
We present the Bridge over the River Kwai, subsequently the lawsuit over the River Kwai, and finally Ministry of Hygiene annual report on the River Kwai.
You saw the film, you read the book. Now feel the suit as you heard it on the new wide stereophonic phonograph. Here it is as nature never intended.
By sitting on both sides of the room, you can hear the full range of Wilton carpets in wrinkled strength.
Yeah, I mean, I listened to that track, one of the tracks from it, and it kind of sounds like very much like a predecessor of Fire Sign Theater.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which we'll definitely do an episode on that, which was kind of a groundbreaking 70s, kind of, I would say, sort of psychedelic influence comedy.
Yeah, very, very.
They probably influence. Did a lot of acid.
Yeah.
Just a funny side note on the record jacket for Bridge Over the River Kwai, it said, for best results, play this record in a circular fashion.
Yeah, there you go. Always with the jokes.
Yeah, but here's a bridge which ties into kind of Martin's sort of biggest comedy hit was featured on the Goon Show Bridge Over the River Kwai album was one Jonathan Miller and Peter Cook. They played a bunch of characters, but they are also known for, ready for it, Scott?
No, Terry.
Beyond the Fringe. You're supposed to say it with me.
Okay, Beyond the Fringe.
Okay. Now, Scott, you're well familiar with Beyond the Fringe. What was Beyond the Fringe?
Let's see. Beyond the Fringe was kind of a musical review that premiered at the Edinburgh Festival in August of 1960. It included such luminaries as Alan
Comedy review. It was a comedy show.
Well, to me, it doesn't matter. To me, everybody's a luminary.
Or everyone's musical.
Yeah. It was Alan Bennett, Peter Cook, and Dudley Moore were among some of the players in there. And it was a big hit up there. And it was good.
Actually
it was
a huge hit all around because it went from there and it played on Broadway. And then they had a big run in Australia and New Zealand. It's kind of like one of the first big comedy shows that got to tour the world.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if this is a real... This clip that we both watched, and I don't know if this is how they stage the show every time, but it was interesting because they're all just wearing suits, you know, ties, jacket and ties, and they just kind of put on different hats, you know, for all the different parts, yeah.
Yeah, and again, they came out of the Edinburgh Festival, which is, you know... both you and I have done our time in Edinburgh during the festival. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just love these, you know, legendary shows that have come originated, you know, out of the Edinburgh Festival.
Oh, yeah.
But that's what really cemented Martin's career was he made the 1961 cast album for the show, which was called, Behind the Fringe. Yeah.
So you want to know about the war? The 30s were coming to an end. heavy with menace, the 40s were just around the corner.
I'm stepping on my down to breathe an atmosphere that's
at the Victoria Palace, Lupino Lane was entrancing London with me and my girl.
On
an Ascot, a year of royal victories. Walt Disney had done it again with Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs.
There's a story I listened to, like this BBC radio documentary on George Martin. So when the Beatles first auditioned for George Martin in 1962, George Martin wasn't convinced that he wanted to take on the Beatles. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine that? Just like, I don't know. I don't know about these Beatles.
I don't know about these guys.
Yeah, I don't know how long of a career they're going to have, which ironically, if you look at it, they didn't really have that long of a career. It only expanded if you go from 62 to 69.
Yeah, okay. I
mean, but, you know, no, but right. Yeah, but they did, you know, their body of work is like speaks for itself. But so then he invited the Beatles into their studio and he got to know them. And because they were funny and made him laugh, he decided to work with them. And one of the questions he asked him is like, he asked the Beatles if there was anything they personally did not like, to which George Harrison replied, get ready for me putting on a Beatles accent.
Okay, I'm ready.
Well, there's your time. Start. Was that Beatles? Or... That's a Liverpoolian accent.
That's your Liverpoolian accent.
Do you want to give that one a stab?
I can't do it, dude.
Well, no, give it a stab. Give it a stab. Give it a stab.
All right. Well, there's your tie for start. That was like my cock. I could do my cockney one. Well, there's your tie for start.
That's
like a Texas cockney guy.
Yeah. That's like that was like a Jeff Foxworthy.
But I can do. But I can do it. Listen, I can do one cockney. Okay.
Oh, okay.
Ready? Heathrow, governor. That's it. That's all I can say.
Oh, but you can do this one. Who do you think you are, the Long Ranger?
Is that what you think?
Yeah.
All right, we drifted a little bit.
A little bit, but that was actually the turning point, is that the Beatles made George Martin laugh, and he went, oh, these lads are kind of funny. I want to work with them, you know, and again, as they say in the business, the rest is musical history.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed.
But yeah, there's one up front, just to bookend this podcast, is up front we had Peter Sellers doing A Hard Day's Night. In 1965, he teamed again with Martin, and they created a top 20 UK hit of Peter Sellers reciting the lyrics of A Hard Day's Night in the manner of Laurence Olivier in Richard III.
It's been a hard day's night. I should be sleeping like a log. But when I get home to you, I find the things that you do will make me feel all right.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's pretty good. And that actually technically, that's the thing about the, which it's great. You know, it's great, produced by George Martin. What's interesting is that, because, you know, William Shatner's kind of gotten a bad name. But the thing is,
Why does he have a bad name?
Well, because, you know, people make fun of his singing and stuff. But what he was actually doing, because I do happen to own the album. And in the liner notes.
Oh, wait, it's called, what is it called? It's A Transformed Man.
The Transformed Man, yes.
Yeah. Oh, I have a funny story about that, but go ahead, yeah.
Okay, in the liner notes, he's mentioned that he's going to do this song in the style of, you know, a Shakespearean actor or something like that. That's why they all sound so weird.
Oh, really? So do you think he was doing it as like a homage of Peter Sellers doing Richard III?
To tie things back in, that's very possible, Harmon. Because you know, he's Canadian. And you know those Canadians have those...
Peter Sellers is Canadian?
No, William Shatner.
And they have because they have the William Shatner building at McGill University.
That's right, yeah. But they,
and which he never graduated from.
Yeah, but they've always had a closer tie to... The motherland, the UK, than America did. So
yeah, do
possible.
They still have the Queen on their money?
They might. I don't know.
Yeah, I think they have at least like a loon or something. Yeah, I remember when I lived in San Francisco, I wanted to buy I went into a record store on Haight Street, and they had a Transformed Man on the wall. Yeah. And, okay, I went, how much is that copy of Transformed Man? And you know what I got from the record store clerk?
What? I'm ready.
More than you can afford.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, dude. It's like, and dude, I think we got the last laugh. Record stores have all closed.
Yeah. And they, well, also, it wasn't that expensive, dude. I just bought mine on eBay for like $8 or something.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. Maybe it was like a first print, whatever.
Well, it could be before. That could have been pre eBay, dude.
Yeah.
You know?
But, yeah, so anyways, he gave me the Simpsons comic book guy attitude. So just in closing, some other comedians that George Martin worked with, only a few on this list I recognize. I recognize Bruce Forth. Do you know him? He's like big BBC sort of presenter. I think he has like one of the longest running TV shows on UK television. But he's kind of he's just kind of like a UK TV fixture.
Bruce Forsyth, yeah, okay.
Yeah. So Dudley Moore, of course, who we already talked about. And the last name on this list, Bill Oldie. Do you know
Bill
him?
Bill Oldie. Yeah, he's from the Goonies.
Goonies. Not the Goonies. The Goonies. Yeah, the Goodies.
No.
Yeah. Which Goodies, by the way, it was kind of like a surreal a comedy show in the 70s, which was very influential to the Mighty Boosh.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. The other interesting thing about which I know this is going to be another podcast that we'll have to get into, but I think one of the other guys in the Goodies, Tim, I can't remember his whole last name, but Tim Brooke Taylor, I think.
Yes.
Yeah. He was in a sketch group with Chapman, I think. Him and
because like Bill Oldie's also he's from either Cambridge or Oxford and was in one of those reviews and also did a show in Edinburgh that toured all over the world.
I think he was writing partners with John Cleese or something like that, or at least he was in a group with him or something.
Yeah, I mean, you imagine like the comedy scene of a smaller country, you know, and again where probably Edinburgh Festival was probably the size of just like the Pleasance at the time.
Yeah, I get
it. You know, like late 50s, early 60s. So, you know, and again, if you're in Oxford and Cambridge, you're all kind of in the footlights and in those kind of groups that a lot of crossover. Yeah, also in with, I believe Graham Chapman was, who's the guy that played the manager in Spinal Tap?
Oh, yeah. You mean your buddy? National Lampoon.
Oh, Tony Hendra.
Tony Hendra, yeah.
Yeah, so he was in either with the Monty Python dudes at either Oxford or Cambridge.
Yeah, those guys were all linked together.
Before we give our takeaways on the history of George Martin, you know, and his comedy contributions to the world, let me play you a little clip from a George Martin produced novelty song called The Hole in the Ground. Do you know this one?
Yeah, listen to the. I watched the video.
A digging his hole in the ground, so big and sort of round it wasn't there, was I. Digging it deep, it was flat at the bottom, and the sides were steep. Went along comes this bloke in a bowler, which he lifted and scratched his head. Whoa, he looked down the hole, pulled him at his soul, and he said, do you mind if I make a suggestion? Don't dig it there, and dig it elsewhere. You're digging it round, and it ought to be square. The shape of it's wrong, it's much too long, and you can't put a hole where a hole don't belong.
Okay, was that used like on a TV commercial or something? Because it sounds really familiar.
Yeah, it sounds familiar, yeah.
But again, that was produced by George Martin. Scott, what is your takeaway on George Martin's contribution to the world of comedy?
I think I think it's obvious to see how he started out kind of in his way supporting comedy and then using that to kind of move on forward to role with the Beatles as a producer. I mean, I think he worked best with his additions of background music, background noises, ambiance, that kind of thing that I think we would see pop up later in the Beatles.
Yeah, absolutely. He was an audio storyteller. He could fill the audio sphere with atmospheric type audio, I guess. But again, you could hear, like in the early stuff, the tricks he would use in later Beatles records. So Scott, raise your glass and say, "Hear, hear, George Martin."
Hear, hear, George Martin.
Hear, hear, George Martin. Hear, hear.
Cheers to you.
Which brings us to viewer mail. Ooh, Scott, we got some hate mail, or depending on how I read it, some love mail from our last episode on the history of right-wing comedians punching down.
Oh, no. Okay, what happened?
Do you want to read it, or should I?
No, you read it.
A James Mack writes, "Most comics don't want to admit that they have any even middle-leaning ideology because they will be burned at the stake. Also, do research before you do a podcast on something. Know the comics' names and what they're known for. This was shit," says James Mack.
Ooh.
James Mack, we're going to give you a free Comedy History 101 coffee mug.
All right, excellent.
What?
And Harmon, how did James contact us?
He contacted us through one of our many social media contacts, which is on Facebook, Comedy History 101, Twitter, Comedy Hiss 101, or Instagram, Comedy History 101, or even our website, comedyhistory101.com.
Oh, excellent.
Subscribe today.
Yes.
And leave totally a comment. And yes, we'll read it on the air, just
on
like
air.
James Mack,
just
who's
like
getting
a
free Comedy History 101 coffee mug.
Wow.
Once we create them. And with that, it's time to plug away. Scott, what do you have to plug?
Well, Harmon, do have, as I said, I've mentioned this over and over again, I do have a film that I wrote and directed and Harmon produced called Everything You Want to Know About Sudden Birth, But We're Afraid to Ask. It's on the festival circuit right now. I do have a little bit of exciting news. We did win a special jury award at the Seattle International Film Festival last week. So that's
kind of here, cool. Here, here, here.
Yeah, so we're still out there. You can actually see it today if you're in San Francisco. Well, this is going up later on, but it's going to be premiering. It's showing at the San Francisco Doc Festival today, June 2nd. And it's also, in the next couple of weeks, will be showed at the Norwegian Short Film Festival. That's in Norway. Oak Cliff Film Festival in Texas, in Dallas, by the way, kind of near Dallas, what we were just talking about, and at the AFI Docs Festival in Silver Spring, Maryland, and then also we just found out that we will be showing in Harmon's Stomping Grounds of Minnesota.
I live in Brooklyn.
Well, I mean, it's your old
stomping grounds. I stomp in Brooklyn.
Yeah, but it's your old Stomping Grounds.
And for me, my plug away, you can read all my current stories on The Observer at Observer.com. I'll be cranking out some regular content for them. Let's see, what else have I to plug? Oh, I have an upcoming book coming out in July. It's called Tribe Spotting, Undercover Culture Stories. You can pick up a pre-order at TribeSpotting.com.
Ooh, exciting.
Yeah, and with that, thanks a lot for tuning in to this episode of
Comedy History 101,
where we school you in comedy. We'll be back next week. Thanks a lot, and bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Good thing about doing comedy in Russia, you have captured the audience.
You're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Comedy History 101.